Thank you. Okay. And again, welcome to everyone who's joining us. I won't be naming everyone. I think you can all see who's on. We've got our various ways that we're sitting in our homes and doing our practice here together on Wednesday night at Santa Cruz Zen Center, Warm Jewel Temple. So, you know, I imagine that different ones of us are turning to different teachings at this time. We had a little bit of a conversation about this last night. We had our Sangha check-in. It's something I'm going to be hosting every Tuesday evening after Zazen, 6:35 to 7. And so we were talking a little bit about, and hello, continuing hello to everyone who's joining us. We were talking a little bit about some of the kinds of teachings that different ones of us have been turning to during this unprecedented time, this pandemic era that we are currently in. And, you know, I have to be honest with you. I knew this talk was coming, and I rooted around through so many Dharma books trying to find what's the wisdom that I would like to bring to this gathering. And finally, I wasn't finding what I wanted. And finally, I just sort of, like how I would go out in the forest and just let myself be led by the birds and the trees and be guided to that which wanted to come forth, I found my way to an issue of the Buddha Dharma Journal. This is the fall 2019 edition, a special women's issue. It had been given to me as a gift, and I hadn't really studied it very well. And so when I found this, I found exactly the teachings that really, really, really are speaking to me right now at this time, because they are teachings from three different women teachers, two ancient and one contemporary, about emotion, and especially about feeling and practicing with the intensity of strong emotion, as I imagine most of us, if not all, are doing right now. Recognizing that the emotions could be, you know, things like fear and anger and grief. And also, people are also experiencing some joy, maybe joy at the simplicity of life, or happiness to be having some time to connect with people that you care about, calling people, talking to people, maybe studying or reading or writing or drawing or doing some of those kinds of things that we, our busy lives, never allow us time for. So probably a real mixture of lots of different kinds of emotions. And in particular, I wanted to focus on one tonight that these women teachers are talking about, and that is the emotion of grief. Some of us are really feeling a feeling of grief for what has already been lost. It's already changed. We're never going to go back to how it was before. And some of us have been grieving for longer than the pandemic about the larger catastrophe that this pandemic rests within, which is what we call climate change. You know, us humans are feeling really close now to the catastrophe because we're getting sick and dying. But the birds and the insects and the plants have been getting sick and dying for some time now and have been trying to cry out to us, help, help, I'm not well, I'm not well, I need your help. And some of us have been listening and some of us have been too busy to pay heed to the greater suffering. So grief is what I wanted to talk about, and not so much talk about, but bring the wisdom of the ages, because this is not new. This is not new. These kinds of deep, difficult, perhaps, maybe not, but strong emotions is, we are intimate with them. This is our human life. This is so part of our human life. So the first of the ancestors that I would like to call forth is a Ubiri. She's one of the Indian teachers who practiced at the time of Buddha. And this is from a beautiful new translation of the Theragata, which is considered the very first collection of poetry and spiritual writing that was published that we know of by women. These were contemporaries of the Buddha. And there's a new a translation that's come out, Matti Weingast. She calls it The First Free Women. So this is a poem that Ubiri wrote. And her particular grief was for her daughter. She lost her daughter. And she was so sad that she couldn't stand it. And she went to talk to the Buddha, which many people did. And especially the women at that time, you know, the deep grief of the life of being a mother in that time would go to the Buddha and say, you know, what should I do with my grief? And so in this poem, she refers to, I heard a voice, and actually what the voice was Buddha. I read that in a book when I was looking up about her. So let me read to you this new translation of a poem by Ubiri. It's called The Earth. How many days and nights did I wander the woods calling your name? Jiva, my daughter. Jiva, my heart. Late one night, finally exhausted, I fell to the ground. Oh, my heart, I heard a voice say, 84,000 daughters, all named Jiva, have died and been buried here in this boundless cemetery you call a world. For which of these Jivas are you mourning? Lying there on the ground, I shared my grief with these 84,000 mothers, and they shared their grief with me. Somehow I found myself healed, not of grief, but of the immeasurable loneliness that attends grief. My sisters, those of you who have known the deepest loss, as you cry out in the wilderness, just make sure you stop every so often to listen for a voice calling back. And of course, we would say, my sisters and my brothers, and those who may not consider themselves a sister or a brother, but my fellow beings, my fellow intimates, you know, make sure as we're crying out in the wilderness that we stop every so often and listen for a voice calling back. So, you know, this, of course, is one of the strange and beautiful things of this kind of emotion, is that we feel so alone, perhaps, in these emotions, especially if we're sheltered in place by ourselves. Some of us have companions with us, some of us don't. But we all, the whole earth right now, we're all feeling some version, you know, whatever it is that you're feeling, you can absolutely be certain that there's lots of other people who are feeling that same people, that same feeling, probably even on this page. And I don't know about you, but sometimes that helps me feel a little more less lonely when I have a feeling like grief, is to know that, you know, we're not alone. And of course, this was one of the great teachings that Buddha often offered when people would come with their particular suffering. He would, like Kisa Gotami, you know, she was so sad again because she had lost her child. This was a big suffering and grief back in those days. And, you know, he said, go and find a mustard seed from a house where they have not lost a child. And so Kisa Gotami went from home to home to home. And of course, almost everywhere, people had lost a child. And by the time she came back to Buddha, she's like, oh, you know, she knew she was part of the human family. My friend from Southern Wales wrote an email, and she said she was sheltering in place. She had fatigue and a cough, and she wasn't sure, you know, if she has the virus or not, but she wrote, she has a way with words, and she wrote, we are one community of souls, one breathing earth body. It is a very specific kind of calling these times. I loved that. We are one breathing earth body. This is a sickness of the lungs, of respiratory function. So I know I had this cough for several months. I don't think it was the COVID virus, but now I'm wondering. It's gone now, but you know, this is a sickness, and the healing that comes by us, you know, healing our breathing, our capacity to breathe together. And could it be possible that when this part of the trials are over, and when we look back and go, wow, remember that time, maybe there could be some healings of the lungs of the earth that could come out of this time. The trees and the water and the air, and our being more careful about what we put into the air, so that all beings may have more clean air to breathe with our lungs, the great lungs of the earth body. So then, further on in this edition, there is this absolutely magnificent essay by Joan Sutherland Roshi. And she has long been one of my favorite writers. She is a Zen teacher, not in our lineage, but she is a Zen teacher. And again, she has just an absolutely beautiful way with words. And she wrote this essay, Here at the End of the World. Now, again, she wasn't talking about the pandemic. She was referring to the grief of the species extinction in the climate change. But what she talks about and how she talks about grief is, of course, completely applicable and helpful to what we are practicing with right now. And I would like to read to you some of her words, because I just found them to be absolutely beautiful and helpful. And so she is, she offers this beautiful phrase. She says, grief is a Buddha. Grief is a Buddha. Not something to learn lessons from, but the way it is sometimes, the spirit and body of a season in the world, a season of the heart mind. I thought, oh, now that's helpful to me to think of this. This is a season that we're in. It is a season of the heart mind. It is a season in our experience as humans on the earth at this time. It is a season that we are sharing intimately with all the beings on the planet. And that 20 years from now, we'll look back and we'll talk with the young ones in this time right now, how it is marking their experiences, the ones who are graduating from high school right now, the ones who are just starting college, the ones who just got a new job, the little ones, the children who are now at home studying with their parents or their parent or somebody that can help. All of us are being deeply, deeply, deeply marked forever by this time. And she's suggesting that we can consider that this is just how it is sometimes. This is a season of the heart mind. She says, we're not meant to, wants me to update my Dropbox. No, go away. She says, you're not meant to cure the grief Buddha, nor it you. You're meant to find out what it is to be part of a season of your heart mind, a season in the world that has been stained and dyed by grief, made holy by grief. Holy, H-O-L-Y. This grief has the potential to be a holy ceremony that we are sharing with all beings. And I think that is determined by how we are approaching it and our practice and what we are putting our attention on and what we are offering to the world, even from our homes. This little screen that we have in front of us is a portal to the whole world right now, more than ever, oddly enough. And don't forget the big world outside of the screen. And even if you're in a place where you can't be walking around very much out in nature, you can step outside. You can stand on your front porch or your stoop and look up at the sky listen to the birds. So great nature, the mountains and the waters are right with us in this season, this human season of our hearts and our minds. And then Joan tells the story of another one of our ancestors. She calls her Mujaku. And when I went and researched it, I went, ah, this is none other than a friend that I have spoken of many times, also known as Myogai Nyodai or Chiono, the one who was carrying the well, the bucket, and the bottom fell out of her bucket. So she's, you know, certainly one of my favorites. And this was actually a story that I had not heard about her. And again, she was in grief. This time it wasn't the loss of a child. It was the loss of her husband. I think he was a samurai, I remember from one of the other stories. So she's lost in mourning. She leaves everything behind. She goes to a monastery to ask for help. So interesting how many of our ancestors do this and how we do this. You know, so often when there's a crisis in our world, we go to the Zendo. We gather. We want to gather. So in this case, she asks for help. And the teacher that she encounters, she says, well, what is Zen? You know, and this is one of the questions I think that maybe I certainly was grappling with in preparing for this talk was, oh, Zen, what does Zen have to say about this? And the teacher replies, the heart of the one who asks is Zen. The heart of the one who asks is Zen. Her broken heart, Chiono's broken heart, is the Buddha of that time and place. So this is Joan now writing about Chiono. Sitting in the dark, the woman runs her fingers over the face of the Buddha of grief, learning its contours. Ugh, whatever emotion we are, you are experiencing, can you run your fingers over the face of that Buddha? Can you learn the contours of the face of that Buddha? Whatever, the Buddha of grief, the Buddha of fear, the Buddha of secret happiness, to have some peace and quiet, the Buddha of terror, the Buddha, all these Buddhas, the Buddha of grief. One day the woman hears the cry of a deer from a nearby stream. Where is the deer? The teacher asks. She listens, concentrated, ripe with something. Who is listening? This is going back to what Ubiri was saying. Oh, sisters, oh, brothers, when you are out, you know, crying out to the world, don't forget to stop and turn your attention out and listen. So here's the same teaching coming through many centuries later. She listens, concentrated, ripe with something. Who is listening? The ripe thing bursts in her. The deer's cry echoes through the trees and rises simultaneously from her own scarred heart. She is there, cloven hooves wet, and she is here wondering, and everything is listening to everything. I think this is part of the healing invitation that we have as we somehow grope to learn how to live together, maybe in a more wholesome way. Maybe there's learnings that we'll have here. I don't know. I hope so. Sometimes I have great faith in the human capacity, and sometimes I have great doubt. Don't know how it's going to turn out, but we can live in a way that is our effort to bring forth the fruit of our practice into being helpful in this time. So then, you know, she has the experience of the bucket, the bottom falling out of her bucket, her great awakening. And Joan writes, her tears become a solvent for what is unyielding within, the defenses we erect to keep from feeling the pain of life all the way through, which also keep us from feeling its beauty all the way through. The tears soften, unstick, breach, topple, and fill. They run like water under the ice, and suddenly the frozen is flowing again. This idea that the tears of our grief are also opening up space for our joy and our pleasure. I feel like that's a really important teaching here. I think sometimes we posit these as opposites. You know, oh my God, there's so many horrible things going on in the world. I better not feel good. I better just always feel bad because it's so bad. And yet the only way the bad is ever going to get better is by us letting ourselves feel good and wanting other beings to feel good. You know, mudita. We want to be able to share the joy of other beings. Well, then we've got to let ourselves feel joy if we want to be able to see and encourage feeling joy in others. So I don't see these as canceling each other out at all. In fact, I feel like the more of our own, when we have it, joy and positivity that we can bring to the situation, you know, it can be very helpful for people who are grasping for something. You know, especially if there's a hard time going on, bring our resources. People need our resources. Well, if you have them to bring, please bring them forth. And so finally, before starting to invite you to open your mic so we can have some conversation about this, I want to offer a couple more of the concepts that Joan brings forward here. I think one of them I've already mentioned is, you know, she talks about how often we're afraid to cry or afraid to let the tears come. Oh my God, you know, will they ever stop? Or is it okay? And she suggests that we can consider that, I love this, they are a small ceremony keeping us close with the world. They are a small ceremony keeping us close with the world. This is the way that we touch the intimacy, is when we can allow ourselves to feel. And I know some of us don't cry salt tears. Some of us do. Some of us don't. But we can feel. Even if you're not a person who has salty tears form in your eyes and roll down your cheeks, we can feel. We can let ourselves feel this compassion, this feeling with others. And this is a small ceremony that keeps us close when we make space for our human emotional being, and we know that we're sharing that with others. And the last thing I think I'd like to say, and then I really don't want to talk too much here. I'd really love to hear some of you and some of your thoughts, is she offers the idea or the concept. She says, you know, grief is a form of love. And this is something that I've been thinking a lot about. As you know, I'm big on love, and I think more than ever that this situation, this pandemic, and the conditions that helped it to come forth the way that it's coming forth, and the bigger pandemic of the world's suffering with all the toxins that we've been pumping into its lungs, I really, really feel like whatever ends up happening, love is one of the most important nutriments that can strengthen whatever the actions are that we take, because we take care of that which we love. We hear those whom we love. So can we bring this attention of love forward with beings in the world, and not just human beings, but the trees and the animals and the insects and all of the earth's creatures who are calling out in this time, I'm not well, I'm not well. Could we heal together? Could we see the health of the trees and the health of the air and the health of the water as our health? And we will not heal from this big sickness that we're in until we start to connect that we need them to be healthy for us to be healthy. And they need us to be healthy for them to be healthy. You know, they need us to work on that part too. So that's pretty much what I want to say as a starter. Maybe it's all that wants to be said, but I would love to invite you to turn on your microphones. And if you would like to offer a comment, anything that was touched as I've been talking, or by these words, by these different women teachers, or how you're finding yourself bringing forth your practice at this time, or questions, if you have any questions, you can ask me anything. Maybe the form would be that if you have a comment or question, you just put your hands in gassho, and I will call on you. And if there's a lot of you at once, I might kind of just call on one, and then you can come back in. So mic's on, and feel free if you would like to come in with your voice to do that. Is that Jean? Are you guys showing? No. Okay. How about this? Then I'll know. T. Kramer.
Let me take off my earbuds. I can hear my, and it's not so distorted. Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely.
I'm calling from Austin, Texas.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for your talk. And I'm turning this up a little bit. My daughter's practicing the piano in the other room right now. something that came to mind as you were speaking was how what I'm experiencing now is this has been like a global enforced pause for all of us and for the ecosystem itself in a way, where I can feel myself taking a deeper breath now that I wasn't aware that I was not taking before.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. That really was the comment. But also, it struck me when you were saying how the atmosphere is the lungs of the earth, that with this big pause, everyone staying home, the earth is already breathing it. The earth itself is already breathing more clearly. There's just so many fewer toxins going into the air, and there's a kind of healing going on at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And wouldn't that be wonderful if it could continue without humans having to be suffering so much? So yeah, thank you very much. And I just want to acknowledge you're coming in from Austin, Texas. And
yes.
Beverly down there from Arcata. Is that you? Yeah. Isn't that so sweet? I think everybody else is in Santa Cruz, but I think that's really cool that we have a little bit of a geographic visitation going on here. Yes, Patrick.
I appreciated Joan Sutherland's image of it's a season of our heart mind.
Yeah, mind, heart, shin.
Yes. An image that I think is connected is one that I've held on to these last few weeks is that it's just this is a time that our bodhisattva lives step into that dharma gate of fear and suffering and not that we shouldn't be worried or fearful, but our bodhisattva body, of course, is our body of fearlessness. And in the same way that we can sit upright and say, this is the season of my heart and mind. I think that's the bodhisattva voice saying, you know, I can step through this Dharma gate.
Yeah.
And so I listened for that, and Joan said it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Patrick. Yeah, I know I've heard before that fear, you know, we sometimes will admire, you know, public figures or historical figures who seem to be fearless. And I've heard many such people say, you know, it's not that I'm not afraid, it's that I don't let that stop me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important bodhisattva practice to consider. It's not like, I can't be a bodhisattva, I can't help because I'm afraid. It's like, no, feel the fear and do it anyway. You know, that's the edge is for the bodhisattvas. Yeah, I know it's impossible. I know that, you know, our vows are impossible. I'm afraid. I'm going to do it anyway. And so, and I think that this encouragement that Joan is offering for us to recognize that all of these states are Buddha states that don't have to stop us from offering our vow, actions from our vow. So thank you for bringing in the bodhisattva teacher. Yeah, Sandra.
I just wanted to share that when I'm watching the news and they're showing shots of all these empty streets, that I'm really touched by that. That, you know, we're really doing this. People really care. People are really doing this. And it also makes me feel less alone. Mm-hmm. Because sheltering in place is challenging, and I also feel strength from knowing that others are doing this.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, Yaro.
I'm just going to say what Sandra had shared with us on, I don't know, it was Monday morning or one of these video gatherings, that at least at that point, Sandra, they were looking for more volunteers for the food bank.
Yes.
Because so many people were either sick or concerned, you know, they couldn't compromise their loved one's health or whatever. So I just thought that would be this would be a good opportunity to share that again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is that Ziggy?
Yeah.
Hi, Ziggy.
Hello. I appreciate this context. The idea that this grieving is not just, you know, for the one daughter, but for all the 800,000 daughters. And I was just thinking about that line from E.E. Cummings, you know, April come she will. And this kind of turning of this, all these seasons of joy and grief that we're very much a part of. And the gift of this life itself to kind of be part of that turning, you know, just that we're all in that continuum that has been, is now, and ever will be.
Yes. Yeah, we have the opportunity to really feel the turning, to really feel what it is to be part of the human family. So often we're in our past life, so busy, so distracted. And here it is, just the beating heart of what it is to be a human being. Thank you. I'm feeling, you know, there's a feeling that happens in the Zendo, the silence after many, many days of sitting. I feel that silence here in our gathering. I feel everybody's silence. How much time we all are just spending in this very, very different, for most of us, very different place. I don't think I want to let you go. I think I want to keep you here. I'm not going to turn it off until you tell me to go away. I just want to sit here and look at you. Oh, I'm feeling emotional. I miss you. Yeah. How are things over at the campus there, Kokyo and Ken? What's happening over there?
They're very, very quiet. The leaves are gathering on the patio and it's very green because there's not much weeding going on. Very lush and green in the garden here. Everyone's welcome to come by and sit in the garden anytime they want. It's very quiet, and people do occasionally drop by and sit out there.
Yeah. Ken?
Yeah, it's pretty quiet. I did have a kind of a person tapping on my windows at night one night, and then the next day he came and he apologized to me for his behavior.
Yeah, he came back and apologized.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I gave him, yeah. It was pretty, it was a little bit like an apocalypse. It felt like it was like vampire or zombies out there tapping on my windows, my door, and I was on the phone at the time. So it was interesting.
A reality where the next morning zombies go, oh, wait a minute. They have a moment of mindfulness and they go and apologize.
And I saw him. I didn't know what it was, and I saw the eyes, and he looked bigger because he was on my step.
Right.
And when I saw him, he was kind of smaller. And it took a lot of guts for him to do that. So I was really appreciative. And
yeah.
You know, and he's in recovery, and you know, obviously he relapsed, but yeah. Mm.
And the crab apple tree. Is I think when maybe just around the time we were closing, it was just starting to really bloom. Mm. And it's a sweet time that we got to miss, and it's pretty much all dropped its petals now and moving on into spring.
Annette, I'm sorry, I forgot you're over there on the campus too. What's happening in your side of the
Well, I've been noticing too just how green it is, like the round paving stones that we have for the walk up to the dog sunroom. There's all greenery around all of them. Normally we would weed that. And the proteas out the back are blooming. They're sort of like this deep orange color. So I took a photo and sent it to Liz because I was thinking that she's not getting to see some of the things as much because she's not around as much. Mm-hmm. Our gardener. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could say goodbye. I'll just wait another moment or two if there's anybody else who wants to say something. Okay, I guess it's time to say goodbye. So see you around. Thanks for coming. It was really nice to be with you. And I do recommend this issue if you're so inclined, the fall 2019 Buddha Dharma. It's got some other really lovely things and other translations from the Theravada. So take care, be well, and see ya.